Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand a little more about how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition Solutions. Skyway helps you know more, win more, and do more in the government contracting world. To learn more, visit skywayacq.com. Today's topic is targeting. This is the latest in a continuing series on this important part of the acquisition process. Let's get started. We've talked about targeting many times.
It's my favorite topic.
I know. Episode 16 talked about targeting, so we know what the government buys and versus what we sell. Then episode 64, we talked about finding the agencies where we, the company, are the prize. That's what we're looking for.
And that's what the government's looking for. But it's a huge market, so you're still drowning in opportunity. And so you really kind of have two options. You can either get more bid and proposal resources and just run faster, chase more stuff, or you've got to figure out how to eliminate some of these, and you know, even good ones, right? And so how do you thin the herd even more?
Before we talk about thinning the herd, let's say some thanks.
This time it's A.G. Bell did an iTunes review, and it says, if you bid on government contracts, you want to listen to this. If you're in government acquisition, you want to listen to this. It makes me better. I got to tell you, it makes my day. Five-star review.
So you sort of paraphrase, but cut some out.
But yeah, thanks for the five-star review from A.G. Bell.
Targeting is both an art and a science. We've talked about the science piece quite a bit. Your reachable market, your target market, your weight class. That was in episode 16.
A lot of the focus on episode 16 was it's not about what it'll get you. It's about what an opportunity will cost you. And that's how you can eliminate the bad ones.
Then we got farther into targeting. We talked more about the focus and communication so that both sides know what they offer and what the best result of this acquisition looks like. And we call that be the prize, or if you're the government, show offers how to be the prize through your RFP, your RFI process.
And full disclosure, I got that idea about be the prize from the Advanced Selling Podcast. So shout out to that podcast, because this is in terms of a selling process. As you want to be the prize, well, it applies here too. And so I want to give them credit for that. So we have a lot of conversations with our listeners and even the members of our paid Skyway community, the premium content. And even with targeting, because this market is so big, they still have more opportunities than they can chase, right? And so that this whole idea of what do you do? And so option one is just chase more, work harder, put out more proposals, work faster. In other words, just sprint. And you do that from time to time, but that doesn't work long term.
So the more proposals you submit, the more burnt out you get, because you're putting less focus on each proposal to be better targeted. It's sort of the race to the average thing. You're putting out lots of average proposals that have a less chance to win.
And the other option, instead of just working harder and sprinting, is work smarter, which everybody knows what that sounds like, but it's kind of hard to do. Because what it means, you got to qualify more. You have to add more steps into your qualification process. You've got to wait for the white whale to show up and then chase it. And this whole idea of I want everything's a white whale, it's easy. It's what most people do, right? So the problem with this whole strategy of working smarter is that not chasing enough makes you feel like your pipeline isn't full. And if you're a business development person, you got to keep the pipeline full. You got to have opportunities, right? So it's hard to say, well, we only have 7 opportunities this year instead of 70. Likewise, chasing things out of your weight class is easy to do. So you have to pay attention. You have to make sure you're not chasing things out of your weight class, because
they're hard to win.
That's right. And the third reason that this is hard to do is that when you lose big. Because a white whale takes a lot of resources to chase. And even if you do catch it, it's a lot of resources to manage. So that's why the weight class is so scary. That's why we spent a whole podcast talking about weight class. And so working smarter touches those three things. Is you got to make sure you chase the right number, make sure you're not out of your weight class, and you're not relying on that big whale to save you at the end of the year, because all three of those
don't bet the company on one win.
Right. So option three, which is what we're recommending, is that subtract, then multiply.
Yeah, that sounds simple, right?
I love that saying. Subtract the things that don't fit and then multiply the things that do.
So you're doing more of fewer things and applying the right resources at the right time for the right customer. That's simple. Very, very easy to do, right?
Sounds like a cat poster. Yeah, do the right thing all the time. Yeah. It's not easy, and it's counterintuitive to subtract then multiply.
How do you build by actually taking stuff away? That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and so think about this. From the right now, most people think of the stuff around you, the opportunity pipeline, all the things that you have. This is your empire. This is your safety net. If you don't want that stuff to go away, because, you know, in some cases, it's your job. It's like, if we subtract half of these opportunities, then what am I here, right?
Right.
So it requires us to zoom out and be ruthless about the opportunities and really be our own harshest critic.
Then we get back to incentive plans. Your sales capture business development folks on the industry side. They're generally incentivized to create more opportunities and win new business. Any opportunities and any new business. How do you incentivize them to target and subtract some of those opportunities? You know, in large organizations, sometimes the sales capture BD folks, they're not aware of the strategic direction, or they don't care because their incentive plan says you get paid for a win. It doesn't say for a win in a specific market with a specific customer a lot of times. So incentives are very important to focus.
And that focus requires us to walk away from sunk costs or sunk effort. And so the money or time that we spend on an opportunity that we end up walking away from, it's gone. It's hard to walk away from it because we emotionally are attached to it, right?
Spend a year and a half developing a certain opportunity, and then you realize that the government has gone a different direction and they've shifted. Someone else has shaped it away from you. Do you still bid on it just because you spent a year and a half developing it, or do you walk away? It's hard to do.
Yeah, because everybody feels like they'll have wasted their time. And that term wasted time, it's very judgmental. And you spent it, right? You can't get it back. Well, if it turns out you misallocated it because you didn't know any better, well, then it wasn't wasted. You just spent it, right? So let me give you an example. Is that I wrote my first book. I co-authored my first book. I was very proud of it. It was the first book that I got published on Amazon. But in the end, it's crickets to the government contracting world. It's called Agile Government Contracting. And it just wasn't a compelling book. It wasn't as good as it could have been. I don't know, lots of reasons, but the fact is it's just not selling.
It didn't work.
Leave it at that. I swung at that ball. It didn't work. And so rather than trying to find more and more and more ways to sell it when I'm pretty much convinced that it's not something that many people are interested in, I just got to walk away. So, I mean, it's hard. It's painful to say, well, I spent 200 hours on that and it didn't generate a whole lot of revenue or a whole lot of brand or anything, right? But that doesn't change the fact the hours are gone. And so it's hard. I know that it's hard. And so take that concept and apply it to any pipeline of work, and you all share this emotion.
Let's talk about when targeting matters in the government acquisition world. Where does it fit in the acquisition time zones, Kevin?
Well, it basically fits everywhere except the source selection zone, because by then it's too late. But in the requirement zone, the market research zone, and the RFP zone is where really you're going to feel the bulk of targeting. And so in the market research zone specifically, on the government side, you want to be hyper-targeting the requirement so that people who have little chance to win, little chance to serve you well, or for that matter, little chance to really impress you with a great proposal because they're stretching, they're outside of their weight class, for all the things we've talked about, make sure the RFP is just hyper-targeted. And it's very easy because I've written RFPs that were too broad. And it felt like we were in this little spot. We're talking about, you know, vehicle maintenance. But vehicle maintenance is wide open. What kind of vehicles? Well, with what kind of fuel injection? With, you know, what are the electric vehicles? I mean, it's really hard to not just throw out a big wide Google net. But the more narrowly you search, you'll realize there's a specialist for pretty much everything. And so that's the kind of RFP you want to be writing, is those five companies who this is all they do. You want them clamoring over the wall to give you the best proposal ever.
Yep. And you make it easy for the rest of them to walk away because they realize this is not exactly what I do. This isn't my specialty. So they don't think, oh, well, this is close enough. We can win this. You want to make it easy for them to say, we cannot win this. We should not bid it.
Yeah, well said. So how about the execution zones? Where do you feel it's most felt?
It's back in the recompete zone. It's the third zone. This is where you've got a relationship with the customer because you've been performing. This is where you can target to shape the next competition, the recompete, or the follow-on, or whatever you want to call it. You can shape that to your needs. You can help the government focus their requirements on what you can deliver. Let's get to why targeting is so important, like we haven't already talked about that enough in previous episodes.
When we don't subtract our organizations, our requirements, our RFPs, our contracts, they get bloated. Maybe I'm oversimplifying, but look around you. People are incentivized to add, not subtract. It takes discipline to take things away. And whenever we subtract, I mean, it could be somebody's baby. It's their special project. It's, you know, there very few people are incentivized to take things away and what I like to call celebrate pruning. You know, you don't see many awards for people shrinking the size of the company.
Here's an award for not doing something. Congratulations. Yeah,
exactly. Or for realizing what's not working.
Think about the FAR. The FAR Council is constantly adding new parts to the FAR, but how often do they remove anything? No one ever celebrates the removal.
It's really, maybe we should. let's give them a bonus for taking things out of the FAR. Wouldn't that be fun? So to target your ideal customer, or to target your ideal contractor, if you're on the government side, you subtract out and subtract and multiply, right? The way this works is you just subtract out what doesn't have to be there. Look through the RFP, look through the requirement, look through all the things that you could be doing, but they're not your superpower. They're not the focus. And then multiply what's left over. So another example is I'll use my second book. Rather than try and make a book that talked about everything I could ever teach you about government contracts, which this podcast kind of does that, it has one purpose: save your time, understand why the government market may or may not be for you. So the purpose of this book doesn't talk about how to do all these GSA schedules and how to do all these different things. It has one purpose: should you be in the market or not?
Yep. And the early drafts had all kind of tangents that supported should you be in the government or not, but weren't completely focused on that. And how hard is it to edit out what doesn't belong and what's not focused on that singular goal?
And there's a lot more work. But I know that it helps more people because it's focused. But it was harder to do. It was harder to take like 500 words of a point that's interesting but not relevant to the book and just delete it. That's an emotional event.
Like you said before, it's somebody's baby. And in this case, everything in there was your baby.
Exactly.
It's tough to pull it out. Let's get back to why should the government care about subtracting then multiplying and targeting?
Well, it's bigger solutions and bigger contracts don't necessarily mean better contracts
or results.
Yeah, good point. I mean, less really can be more, particularly in individual contracts. And so what I mean by that is put fewer, and you hear me talk about this before on the podcast, having fewer requirements, making smaller contracts, getting, you know, increasing your reps, it makes them run more smoothly. And while they can be harder to administer from a volume perspective, I would argue that even having more contracts that all operate efficiently, meaning that you don't have to constantly be modding them and you know, negotiating new terms and conditions because it's so complicated, they actually work better than one or few or one big catch-all bloated contract that tries to do everything, because that's what the race to the average looks like. Is we have 50 customers on here that I, as the contracting officer, I can't possibly know all their requirements. I can't possibly really understand each one of their individual needs. And so the contract gets out of control.
Yep, we have one contract that does a mediocre job at everything.
There you go.
Which sometimes that's what you need, but I totally get what you're saying. Sometimes you have a contract that just flows. Everything works. There's nothing extra.
And that's what subtract and multiply feels like, is you take out all that stuff that doesn't need to be there and then multiply what is. And you'll see it when you have an RFP, when you have a contract, when you have a project in your own life, you're going to see the clarity of that. And I've done this wrong.
Yeah, so have I.
We had broad contract, particularly service contracts that just did everything, and they were harder to award. They were the big whale. They were a big whale for us as the acquisition team, and they were the big whale for industry because they were this giant contract, right? And granted, that's sometimes unavoidable. I'm not making that case. What I'm saying is that those are what happens when you keep adding. Whereas the ones that I did that were much more focused, for example, we had a professional services contract that had four people on it. But those four people were so specialized, and they weren't that much more expensive, honestly. And to be fair, this is a GSA task order. But those four people did exactly what they needed. And when I awarded that contract at the beginning of the year, I don't think I ever talked about it again until it was time to exercise the option. Because it just flowed. The customer was happy. Those four people were happy. Everything just worked. And so the scale factor of having a large contract that does everything that we keep adding to, we think it's more efficient, but adding isn't always more efficient.
Yeah, and from the industry side, what are you chasing that you shouldn't be chasing? because everything that you stop chasing helps to free up resources, time, and energy to chase the stuff that you should be chasing.
And the idea of when you find an opportunity, and it's going to help you grow, right? It's going to generate revenue, but where are you growing to? Does it help you get to that place you're trying to grow to? And this goes back to your point about the strategic direction of the company.
Yeah, subtract then multiply is all about understanding the strategic direction for your company. And when you understand this, it helps educate you on what you should subtract. Most companies don't spend enough time developing, and more importantly, communicating the strategic direction to their employees or even to their customers. Communication of your strategic direction to your employees and your customers helps everyone understand what you should be bidding on, what you shouldn't be bidding on. Unless, of course, you have some big strategic shift that you don't want to tell customers or all the employees right away because you'll lose that competitive advantage or whatever. But in most cases, not enough time is spent communicating that. So insufficient effort communicating that and focusing your BD and capture resources on the strategy means that they could be flailing about trying to develop business, find opportunities, and get wins everywhere. Waste of time, waste of money. And the thing that's probably the hardest is for management to have the discipline to stay focused on that strategic direction when revenue or profit goals are at stake. Because when it gets towards the end of a period, especially for public companies, they're trying to hit their numbers. So what do? You start trying to do anything you can just to hit numbers. And doing anything you can may be completely contrary to the strategic direction you're trying to head. And it's only going to haunt you later. So you sacrifice that long-term direction in the service of these short-term goals. It's hard. I'm not trying to criticize here. I know it's very, very difficult. But if you can manage to subtract out all that distraction, all that time and energy can be spent multiplying what you really should be focusing on.
And honestly, just having a conversation about asking the question, what can we subtract? You're already 50% ahead of most people that never, ever ask that question.
Everybody has a list of everybody has a to-do list. Not many people have a stop-doing list, but that stop-doing list is the key to subtracting.
So the idea, of course, is to carve away all the noise, right? And so for the Skyway community members, if you're a paid community member, we actually have a tool for this. It's a quad chart that asks questions and allows you to really kind of focus your energy and say, does this fit into our overall strategy? So go to, if you're not a community member, go to skywaymember.com and start with an individual membership, and you can just download this the notes from this particular podcast episode, and it'll have the quad chart in it.
Okay, what's your key takeaway for this targeting 301, the subtract then multiply principle?
It's a left brain and right brain exercise, right? So the left brain is, that's the data. You have to have, you know, what data are we looking at, which we talked about in episode 16 and 64. We also have to have the right brain part, which is, what do we do well and how do we prove that we can do it well? And you need to be able to focus your energies around that why and what we do part. So to focus your energy, don't think about the 100 things you could say yes to. Think about the 99 things you got to say no to. And what's that one that you got to pick? Because the more you subtract, the more you'll start to see the multiplication happen. The more you'll see the right opportunities turn to more of the right opportunities. And you see this, right? And don't be afraid that you'll run out of targets. That's one of the beauties of the government market. It's the world's biggest buyer. There's so much opportunity that the more you target, the more of the right opportunity you'll just keep finding.
Yeah, unless, of course, you make something very specific, like maybe nuclear warheads, in which case there may not be more opportunities than you could ever chase out there for building nuclear warheads, right? But yeah, I totally agree. In most cases, yeah, what you're saying is
99% right.
My takeaway is this goes back to Pareto's law, the old 80-20 rule. And I'm not talking about our podcast 80-20 principle. This is the basic, take a look at your revenue and profit across all your projects and your opportunities. It's very, very likely that a small proportion of those, maybe 20%, make up most of the revenue and profit that your company makes. If you focus your efforts on the small proportion, the 20% of the projects and opportunities that are the most profitable, and eliminate or minimize what you do with the other 80% as much as possible, you're on the path to success.
And on the government side, using the same Pareto principle, look at the contracts that are smooth. Look at the contracts that don't have a lot of modifications. If you're in the headquarters and you're seeing a lot of reviews come through on particular types of contracts because they're having problems, that's an indicator. Which ones are you not hearing about? And this goes back to, Shelley had made a point about, nobody celebrates every plane that lands safely every day. So the contracts that are low maintenance, ironically, are the ones that you don't necessarily hear that much about, but those are the ones that are working. So do more of that and subtract out a lot of this superfluous stuff that you're constantly having to go get, more approvals and creates more modifications and is harder to manage. Find the ones that are working and do more of those.
The only thing most people ever think about are the things that cross their desk every day, the ones that have problems. Very little time is spent searching out the ones that don't have problems.
Yeah, because those are the winners. Those are the acquisition plans and strategies that are working. Let's multiply those.
Agreed. All right, that's it for today. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
See you, Paul.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. To get access to our show notes, become a member of the Skyway Connection community. Visit skywayacq.com/connect to get started. Remember, send me your topics, questions, comments, and complaints to Paul at ContractingOfficerPodcast.com.